You're listening to Capstone News Now on WVUA FM 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Rich Robinson, joined with Taylor Ray here. Also, Dr. Andrew Billings. Dr. Billings here at the University of Alabama is here to speak about whether there's going to be an increased Olympic coverage and audience. And he's also an expert, an internationally acclaimed expert in communications. And we appreciate you, sir, for joining us on our program today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And let's talk about the Super Bowl real quick before we get to the Olympics. The numbers coming out today that the Super Bowl ratings for yesterday on Fox was the fifth highest in Super Bowl history. What's your takeaway from that number?
Well, to me, it still shows, you know, I was projecting this is going to be the top rating that we ever had for a Super Bowl. It shows actually how Alaska the Super Bowl is. You find out who's going to win at halftime and still only lose 5 to 10% of your potential audience. I think if it were a close game, instead of 108 million, you were probably looking at 115, 116, which would be a record. If you only lose that kind of portion to your audience when you already know who's going to win, it's really a staple of American society.
And I'm not sure if you have this information offhand, but is there like a peak time during the game when the numbers are usually highest? Do people tune in if the game is really good? Do they tune in, or those kind of casual football fans?
Beginning and end is what we find. So, you know, yesterday I'm sure I didn't get the minute-by-minute ratings yet, but the beginning always is going to be, you know, from kickoff on, they project that those are going to be the best commercials. That's going to be, you know, when the game's still in doubt. From there, it can do a gradual build. But what usually happens is people will check out to see if the game's something that's interesting enough for them, and they'll especially peak in the fourth quarter if the game's still in doubt like it was a year ago.
We're speaking to Dr. Andrew Billings, a professor here at the University of Alabama. Now, Fox spends they have the contract this year for the Super Bowl. How much did they have to spend? And again, I'm not sure if you have this information on hand, but they had to spend a tremendous amount of money, first of all, to get the rights to the Super Bowl, and then the production quality is obviously very high. So is it worth Fox's while to spend all that?
Well, long and the short is I'd say yes, it's worth it. Now, we don't have an actual figure on what they pay for the Super Bowl because it comes as a part of their package. So they have the NFC conference package. There's four different packages, you know, Fox, CBS, you know, ESPN and beyond, and the NFL Network on Thursday nights. So they are contractually given a certain number of Super Bowls, and they know many years out, and it's all part of that. What we know is the NFL is now a $9 billion television business. And from my perspective, the fact that you can even have a flat rating or actually even have them increase is completely the opposite of every form of programming that tends to be binge-watched or something on
right.
Netflix or another internet forms, you know, where the ratings overall are going down.
What about the ad spending? I mean, it's absolutely insane almost to think that this type of money spent on an advertising, millions of dollars for 30 seconds of airtime, is at all worth it for these advertisers? Do you have any research or anything that kind of says one way or the other about that?
Well, what we show is you know, there is a degree of prestige that comes from it. So there's kind of this prestige tax that goes on top of the Super Bowl. But more than that, for a lot of people anymore, it's one of the rare occasions where they'll even watch advertisements. So, you know, 20 years ago, you'd say, okay, the Super Bowl ads are the best. I'm really going to pay attention, but you're at least watching the other ones that are, you know, within Seinfeld or whatever it was. Now we're fast-forwarding just about everything else via DVRs and other devices, and we're not for the Super Bowl. So, you know, where DVR rates are, we're recording 40% of what we watch, and for live sports, it's 4% or lower, and I think Super Bowl, it's even lower than that. So it really kind of rises above all other things.
How much do you think the halftime show affects the ratings? Because maybe this year a lot of people didn't know who Bruno Mars was. Do you think that had something to do with the fifth place ranking?
It certainly depends on who you've got programmed there as to what demographic's going to stay tuned in. So we went through a period, especially after the wardrobe malfunction of 10 years ago, where we got a lot more conservative or older choices. Let's say, you know, when The Who or, you know, you have some groups like that that aren't going to be appealing to the younger demographic. Yesterday, we got the opposite, I think, where a lot of younger people really see these as classic hits, and some of their parents probably look and say, now, who's Bruno Mars and what are these songs again? So it really depends on what you've programmed during that slot, and I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers was a nod to that audience to try and keep the audience, the older audience, locked in.
Speaking to Dr. Andrew Billings of the University of Alabama, internationally known scholar on communications and sports. So let's shift a little bit from the Super Bowl, obviously probably the biggest athletic event in the United States, and it is gaining worldwide appeal, even as a spectacle. Some people around the world watch it, even though if they don't know what football is or don't know the rules to it. But the Olympics is something that obviously has a large international audience. What is the Olympics appeal domestically in the United States, and is it worth NBC's absolutely astronomical spending to win the rights to broadcast the Olympics?
Well, it's interesting because every time, you know, I remember USA Today had a columnist that said you can easily figure out what the Olympic contract's going to be. You figure out actually what it's worth and then add 50%, and that's what NBC will bid for it. From NBC's perspective, it keeps them viable. Even when they really had some down years with their programming, they still had these cornerstone things, and it really bolstered all of their cornerstones. So if you looked at it as, okay, it's prime time that matters to them, it's late night with Jay Leno, which they can lead into, and now it's going to be Jimmy Fallon, and so they can really use that as a promotional footnote for that. It's the Today Show in the morning. Well, if you turn off your TV to Jimmy Fallon, you're going to turn it on and it's at the Today Show. It really starts to promote just about every core thing for NBC, and that adds some utility while they develop some other programming.
But why don't we see other networks, and I know that some have tried, but why don't we see Fox or CBS or ABC try, or ESPN for that matter, really go after the Olympics?
Well, it all depends on what your brand is somewhat, at least for ESPN. I'll use ESPN as an example. So, for instance, ESPN depends on what they're programming, but on average, about 68% of the people who consume ESPN media are men. Now, for live sports, that becomes about, 65%. So, anywhere from 35 to 40% of the viewers for live sports are women. That gets almost reversed with the Olympics. We have about 60% of Olympic viewers are women. That's a completely different formula. Now, that doesn't say ESPN couldn't bid for it, but it doesn't fit in with their brand as much of that. So NBC's... their logo, their bug on the screen often has the Olympic ring, so it's part of who they are, and they really value the prestige that comes with that.
Now, what about the way that NBC is rolling out their broadcasting of this event? They have, I don't know if it's hundreds, but they've got close to hundreds of broadcasters doing tens and tens of sports across many different platforms, online, I'm not sure if they still do it on Bravo, but they have it across all these different, CNBC, all these different tentacles of NBC. Tell us a little bit about how big of an effort it is for them just to do all this.
Well, your typical sports news organization or sports broadcast organization has about 300 people as a part of it at any one time, CBS Sports or something like that. For the Summer Olympics, at least, I know NBC employed 3,300. So we're looking at 11 times that amount. For the Winter Olympics, I would guess it'd be slightly down, but it's still going to be in the thousands. So they get a lot of people who will freelance, even from other networks, who... the networks will release them from their contract just to do that Olympic work because there's prestige in saying, hey, they've covered an Olympics, it's visibility, it helps us then when they come back on, with other sports programming later.
Well, one last question for you in terms of the Olympics. And again, we're speaking to Dr. Andrew Billings. He's the Ronald Reagan Endowed Chair in Broadcasting here at the university. We're kind of getting to a point in sports in particular where delayed viewing is becoming more and more of a thing. Some of these events are going to be at 6 a.m. earlier or later, and people are working. But, if you really care about, the ski jump, and let's just say that it's at 6 a.m. here in Central Time, obviously you're not going to be able to watch that. But you're at work, and you're on Twitter, and you see who wins. How does NBC compete with that? How do they combat that sort of thing? And ESPN, a lot of times, I'm not sure if they do it intentionally, but they'll announce what happens, and it'll completely spoil what NBC wants to do.
Well, one of the fundamental assumptions that we make in sports media is that the number one reason why people tune in is to see who wins. And that's not always the case. We found with the London Games, that was a problem. We had the hashtag NBC fail. Everyone said, this is horrible. It's on tape. It's too schmaltzy, all this. And then the ratings came in, and it had gone up 12%. And it reminded me real quickly of a story where I was talking to a Fox producer who at the time was working for ESPN, and they were getting ready for the first time to broadcast the Heisman Trophy presentation. And everyone knew that year that Vinny Testaverde was going to win that award. He's like, how do I sell this hour-long production where we have one thing to reveal, and we already know what that answer is? And the response was, don't worry, people will tune in to watch a coronation. And that's what I think we find with the Olympics as well, too. If you find out that Gracie Gold won the gold in women's figure skating, despite, you know, the odds being stacked against her, you're going to tune in, not necessarily to see what happens, because you already know, but you want to see how it happened. And that's what happens a lot with the Olympics.
Very interesting. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Billings, Ronald Reagan Endowed Chair in Broadcasting at the University of Alabama. One last question for you, sir. Away from the Super Bowl and the Olympics, Fox Sports One is kind of a new endeavor in cable sports broadcasting. Is ESPN afraid of Fox Sports One? Because yesterday they were all over the Super Bowl coverage, and a lot of people for the first time probably saw what Fox Sports One was. Does ESPN have any fear for Fox Sports One, and should they?
Well, they'll certainly never publicly say they have any fear there. I do think it's the most full-on assault of ESPN that we've seen, really, since ESPN came into existence. That said, there's a whole lot more evolution. So I think ESPN is keeping tabs on Fox Sports One. They're seeing what they're programming. Right now, Fox Sports One is especially skewing to a younger demographic. They're showing UFC. They're showing some other things that ESPN is unlikely to show. Really, though, from Fox Sports One's perspective, if a year in, which it'll be 1 year in August, if a year in they have a majority of people who even know how to find it on the dial, I think they'll consider that a success. Because if they know where to seek it out, then the programming will follow.
Well, very interesting. Dr. Andrew Billings is the Ronald Reagan Endowed Chair in Broadcasting in the TCF department here at the University of Alabama. So we appreciate very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.